Hello, this is Matt Barbie with Time for Success, Business Owner Dad's Edition. And I am a speaker, trainer, author, strategist, some stuff like that. And, you know, this show's really about working with, you know, business owner dads and all the struggles with just trying to be successful in all areas of life. And we've got an exciting guest today, Mr. Joel Emery. So, hey, Joel, how's it going, man?
Hey, Matt. Good to see you.
Good, good. So tell me a little bit more about your business and your family and all that stuff.
All right. Well, business-wise, my company is called Ignite Strategies, and I serve as a sales systems architect for small and mid-sized businesses. And basically, that means understanding who people's best clients are, how they're going to find more of them, pull them in, convert them into customers, and retain them.
Excellent. Excellent.
And then on the family side, married with three sons, ages 14, 12, and 4.
Yeah, that's a pretty good spread.
You know?
Yeah, because I've got the 13 and 4-year-old. I don't have that middle one in there, but it keeps you on your toes, right?
Definitely does.
Good, good. So sales system architect. So first of all, like what made you start your own business? What was the instigator for that?
So there's a...
Or the inspiration.
There's a long story, Matt.
Okay. All right. Well, good. We've got like 22 minutes left. So,
you know, I have worked in everything from marketing, sales, development, HR, operations, finance, IT, dabbled in all of the administrative components of business.
Yeah.
I've worked in both the for-profit and not-for-profit sector.
Yeah.
And enjoyed all of that quite a bit. But when I... wrapped up my last full-time engagement about 3 years and 3 months ago, took a good look around and said, what do I enjoy doing? Mm-hmm. What am I best at? Where do I enjoy spending my time? And realized a handful of things. One was the way that technology and our culture had gone. The gig economy had become an option that it was not 20 some odd years ago when entering the workforce. And then the other factor was that I'd really done well at building systems and structures for increasing revenue. And took a look at that and said, what I want to do is serve as a basically fractional head of revenue operations for a handful of different businesses. I like working with small businesses as opposed to large corporations. Small basically being, you know, under 100 employees.
Yeah.
I would define that generally speaking.
Right, right.
As opposed to a large business entity.
Right.
And so started my own enterprise to help businesses make more revenue. And do it in a sustainable manner that benefits and adds value to the company and activates the employees and the communities that they serve.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I think there's some similar paths that got us to some similar business endeavors. But, I love what you're talking about there. And now, what was that, some of that background? Because I know that one of your positions was a pretty interesting one, right?
I had about 8 years. I would say I had the most interesting job in St. Louis.
Yeah,
I was the executive director of Circus Flora in St. Louis.
And, that's phenomenal.
We from 2007 to 2015, and we increased our revenue by 90% to 95% over that time period.
That's great.
Really expanded our offerings to the St. Louis community, and my final year there touched more than 40,000 people in St. Louis with a handful of our programs. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, learned a lot. And one thing about the nonprofit sector is the amount of work that you need to do to generate alignment and get everybody onto the same page is different than what people have traditionally done in corporate America.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what I do is taking that work, those lessons learned from the nonprofit world of generating alignment, generating engagement with various constituencies, and tying those into the business world so that, as we go through building systems, building processes, building an understanding of who and what a company is, it's done as a team.
Yeah.
It's done in a way that all the employees then have a sense of ownership and understanding of those elements.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to get everybody kind of on mission together in a little bit of a different way than maybe in corporate. But and not just the employees, but I guess because it was a nonprofit, right?
It's correct. So absolutely.
So the donor base and, as you say, the constituents,
a number of different stakeholders,
right?
You know, a number of people who have a sense of ownership in the company, whether literal or emotional.
Yeah. Yeah,
and at the end of the day, we want our employees, we want our clients to feel a sense of emotional ownership and stakeholder and be stakeholders in our undertakings, in our enterprises.
Yeah, yeah. So you've been in that business leadership position for a number of years,
yes.
And you've been balancing that with having a family and developing that family with three children. Tell me a little bit more about that journey, yeah. If you will.
Well, I'm sure I'm not the first person on your show to say that's complicated.
That's the point of the show, right?
Yeah. Everybody has their own own situation and journey. There's a lot of similarities, and all we can do is learn and share and listen.
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
The elder two are from my first marriage, mm-hmm. and so they're with myself and my wife half the time.
Yeah.
And then the younger one, the 4-year-old, is with us all the time.
Yeah. Right, naturally.
As would be expected. And, it's an interesting thing. The eldest one is a freshman in high school. I'm going to refrain from using their names to avoid embarrassing them horribly.
That's all right.
So the eldest is a freshman in high school. And then I have one that's a seventh grader, and he has autism. Mm-hmm. And that brings a whole host of challenges. He was first diagnosed at age 3. From age 3 to 12, all the way through elementary school and into middle school, and a whole host of challenges there.
Yeah.
And then the 4-year-old's just a full of life, vivacious, active ball of energy and joy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for talking a little bit too about your son who has autism. And I know that there's a lot of folks out there who have parents or have children, parents who have children with special needs. And some folks might because of the extra attention that sometimes requires, it might kind of keep them from maybe even jumping into the business world for themselves or any of that stuff. So share with them, a little bit more about your journey, if you're willing.
Oh, absolutely. So like I said, he was diagnosed at age 3 with autism. Yeah. And as he's grown older, his behaviors have been more divergent from neurotypical children.
Mm-hmm.
We went through elementary school, getting by in that nurturing sort of environment. But when we hit middle school, it just really threw a wrench in it.
Oh,
and okay. He actually was suspended for 24 or 26 total days of his sixth grade year. At that point in time, really the need to embrace the gig economy became that much more important. The flexibility that it provides to be available to run to school at the last moment, to navigate challenges or to communicate with the principal or whatever may need to be done. So actually starting my own business was in the end a necessity in order to be able to be the father I needed to be and to allocate the time that I needed to allocate to taking care of him.
Yeah. Wow. I think that there's a lot of folks who, wish that they could spend more time and, so instead of kind of saying that was almost an excuse not to start your business, you're saying, I was dedicated to being there for my son. I was just going to figure it out.
Right. Several days of the week, I have had to be 100% available at the drop of a hat to go get him.
Yeah.
And so I've committed to that. But having my own business has enabled me to do that.
Yeah.
The trade-off has been that I don't have a guaranteed source of income from working a 9-to-5 traditional 40-hour a week job.
Right.
So there's trade-offs there too.
Yeah.
So I have to get out there and hustle the business myself, but it's necessary in order to do what needs to be done for this child.
Right. Right. So how did you first decide that you're going to go into sales architecting and revenue architecting, right? As your business, when you know you knew that there was going to be some time challenges and all that. I mean, how did you kind of weigh those options?
So, like I said, took a good look at what I was best at, and building out the systems and facilitating things with teams, so that everybody operates in alignment was a big part of that.
Yeah,
I took a look at opportunities that were out there, and the small business world is where I wanted to operate. They don't have the resources or the desire to necessarily have a full-time person in that sort of position on their team.
Right.
So I've built it out myself from there.
That's great. That's great. And so now do you have clients like in other states or other areas of the world they have to manage?
I have worked at this point with everything from a $2 billion retail chain, helping them understand what was going on with their sales in some specific product lines, to a couple of manufacturers, helping them with market research to determine what the next opportunity was to pursue, some boots on the ground market research to determine what creative works best, a whole lot of content marketing for some professional service providers, all the way to helping some solopreneurs with their undertakings.
So it's a pretty big range.
It's a pretty broad range. I've so far in the last year traveled from Maine to Texas, or in the past few years traveled from Maine to Texas.
Yeah.
Working with clients.
So how did you balance the travel with, being there for your son? I mean, did you try to manage it? Because your son's half the time.
Yeah. So he's with me half the time. Then I travel on the other half of the time.
Okay. So you're able to manage it with your schedule, with your son, and then the schedule with your clients.
Yeah, and his mom and I are flexible, and we get along about as well as any divorced couple possibly can.
That's good. That's good.
We mutually adjust things. She had to travel to Vietnam recently for her work, so I kept the kids for a few extra days in there too.
Yeah.
So we navigate it.
Well, that's great. I mean, and it's got to be, a little bit of an extra challenge having a son with special needs, and you guys kind of have to bounce back and forth between who's going to the school and picking him up, depending on, who's there. I mean, can you tell a little bit more, maybe just kind of share maybe a couple of nuggets or insights for folks who are trying to balance that out? I mean, they might be in a similar situation, kids with special needs, but then also trying to balance that relationship that could have additional stress because of all the scheduling needs and all that stuff with the ex-wife or ex-husband or whatever. Do you have any nuggets for that?
Yeah, a few things that have worked really well. One is the joy of the Google Calendar. We have four co-parents and two sons, all on one common Google Calendar. So we can plug in on it, doctor's appointments, any schedule changes, holiday things, and map those out for 3 or 4 months into the future so we can all be on the same page. That's huge just to begin with.
Yeah, shared calendar. My gosh, yeah.
And applying that to the family situation has definitely helped. One of the other big things is I get up and I work. I put in my intentional set of time allocation very early in the morning. I tend to get up and get that done. I get up somewhere between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock and just sit at my desk and I work until it's time to start getting the kids out the door. That's the time that I have the most energy. That's the time that I'm not going to be interrupted. That's the time that I'm not going to be responding to other people necessarily. I can do what I know I proactively need to take care of at that point in time.
Yeah.
So I take care of that then. And then the process of getting the kids and family out the door, that usually takes a good couple of hours to navigate all of that.
Sure.
And then sort of regroup, and then I spend a lot of the rest of the day in face-to-face time with people.
Yeah.
And then if I have very creative work I need to do, I find that's better done burning the midnight oil.
Oh,
and,
okay.
So just paid a lot of attention to my own rhythms, my own cycles, and understand when I work best.
Yeah.
So to kind of back up through that, the early morning for the intense, serious, very thoughtful, intentional work, very creative work late at night, sort of when it's quiet and I can you know, just burn the midnight oil and let those creative juices stir.
Right.
And you know, the middle of the day, just for human interaction at that point.
Right.
And also recognizing there's a time in the middle of the afternoon that it's good to take a little break, mm-hmm. and take a few minutes to recharge.
So that that whole getting up early thing. So I've kind of started an add-on to you know, some of my programs that includes a 5 a.m. kind of just quick call, kind of motivational thing, kind of accountability as well, some, you know, some goal checking and stuff. But so I started that. Now it's a challenge for a lot of people. I mean I hear it all the time that people want to get up early, but they can't quite get up early. Have you always been a morning person, or was it
not
a process?
Somewhere a few years ago, it just had to become that way.
Yeah.
It was the only way that I had the time to get done what I needed to get done.
Yeah.
We all have a limited, I hate to say limits. I mean, we all want to have a very open mindset.
Right.
But
right.
At the end of the day, we have an amount of bandwidth,
yes.
Available yeah. to us. And that's a combination of hours, intellectual energy, and emotional energy.
Yeah.
And a lot of parenting, especially with a child with special needs, requires mm-hmm. a lot of that emotional energy.
Yeah.
And when you run out of that, it can be hard to get other work done.
Yeah.
So I found myself needing absolutely beyond the shadow of a doubt to get up early in order to use the energy I had available to me to get work done for clients.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
so I started that probably 5 or 6 years ago at this point.
That's great. So was there any, like, how did you build up that habit? Was there anything that you did just kind of slowly make it happen? Did you have to set 10 alarms? You know, did you have to ask your wife to kick you out of bed?
We talk about intentionality and making intentional choices.
Yeah.
It honestly just sort of evolved. It was just yeah. a necessity, and it just happened. And at this point, if I stay in bed on a Saturday morning past 7, it's a miracle.
It's become a habit.
I wake yeah. up pretty regularly by 5 o'clock. I don't even set an alarm anymore. It just happens.
That's great.
And at this point, if I do happen to sleep in, I just trust my body and say I probably needed it.
Yeah.
And roll with it.
That's great. That's great. So especially when you have children with special needs, be that autism or, heck, I mean, sometimes people of, you know, kids of neurotypical, I think you said neurotypical development, still can be very trying emotionally.
Absolutely.
So if you find yourself in that situation, you're saying that getting up early before you have to expend all that emotional energy is a great way
right.
to be able to still be very, very productive in your day.
Right.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. So the
other way I would describe it is usually in that 2 hours of the morning, I can get 8 hours of work done.
Oh, yeah.
That's the trade-off.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's well worth it.
Exactly. That's great. That's great. So now you have clients, again, like all over the country, and you do some traveling. I'm guessing you probably do a lot of, like, video conferencing. And what are some other ways, some other tricks that you use to really manage your time well with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, video conferencing is very helpful, of course. Various project. A lot of my clients, they have their own project management
right.
systems.
Okay.
So I end up having to adapt and incorporate my work into theirs.
Okay.
Then I have clients where I've built them project management systems. It's a
great.
Little outside of my normal scope of work, but it was helpful and, you know,
right.
flexible, versatile, get done what a client needs.
Right, right. Well, you know, sometimes you just gotta, you know, somebody needs help, you're there, you know how to do it, you get it done, right?
Yeah.
So project management tools, you know, I bet a lot of small businesses, well, I mean, I know for a fact that a lot of small businesses, they're not even comprehending necessarily what a project management tool can do for them.
Okay.
So maybe talk a little bit more about that. How do you utilize those project management tools to be able to help these small businesses, especially, you know, maybe even the solopreneurs or the micro businesses
yeah.
that are just trying to figure out, how do I make sure everything gets done that needs to get done? How are you leveraging that for your clients?
Well, I mean, the first thing is selecting the right tool.
Yeah.
If you look out there, there are hundreds of project management tools. There are hundreds of CRMs. There are hundreds of email marketing tools.
Yeah.
There are so many of them out there. So the first thing is really understanding what the scope of what needs to be accomplished is,
yeah,
and understanding what those processes need to look like,
yeah,
before even selecting the tool.
Yeah.
And because if you just begin with the tool and then plugging in processes, you end up with an inefficient process that just goes fast.
Right.
And so you really need to have that process mapped out and understood well.
Good,
in
good.
And for that, a fan of the good old-fashioned whiteboard session.
Yes, yes.
Or a virtual whiteboard session if,
right,
it's,
right,
if it's done online. And but then selecting the tool. And in the case of a lot of the solopreneurs, they frequently repeat a process or maybe a set of three processes over and over again for,
yeah,
clients. And so setting up what those processes look like.
Good, good.
And so you just plug in the basic contact information and it creates a whole new process flow for the new client, and away,
yeah,
you go.
Well, I'm sure you talk to your clients a lot about basically kind of checklists or checkpoints, making sure that everything needs to get done. So you're saying that maybe a good project management tool helps to kind of automate some of that and make it virtual.
Yeah, automation is great.
Yeah.
More and more everything is automated. And I don't like to use automation in a way that replaces human beings. It's, mm-hmm, more like in the military, they've developed exoskeletons people can use to then lift 800 pounds at a time.
Right.
So what it does is it enables one person to lift more.
Yeah.
So if you use automation properly, you can accomplish that. You can enable one human being to accomplish more. And that especially goes with marketing and CRM. Marketing automation systems.
Right, right.
So, you can really empower a sales force to be a lot more efficient and streamlined.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. So, with these automation programs, CRMs, project management, marketing systems, a person can get done a lot more. Because a lot of people kind of buck that idea of automation because, I don't want to get rid of people and all this stuff. But you're saying that, hey, your business should be growing, right?
Right.
If your business is growing, you bring in more revenue, the business is growing.
Right.
You can do a lot more with a lot less.
Well, and ultimately, at the end of the day, it adds value to the business, too.
Yeah.
When a business is based in systems, then there's more value there.
Yeah.
It's easier to attract peak performers. If you want to attract peak performers to come join your team, you need to provide them with the tools they need to succeed, whether that's training, marketing, sales, CRMs, project management systems, because the companies that do provide those tools are the ones that will pull in those peak performers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a necessity at this point for a business to succeed and thrive.
Excellent.
Is to do all of that.
Yeah, yeah. So real quick, again, if you want to recap kind of what you do and how it helps the business owner dad or business owner mom out there, we've got a little bit less than a minute. I'd love to hear that.
So when a business wants to really understand who their best clients are, mm-hmm, I'd say 9 out of 10 companies don't have a good understanding of who their best customers are.
Yeah,
they perceive that they do, but frequently do not. Yeah. Understand who they are, what makes them tick, how we're going to grab them, pull them in, convert them into a client, retain them.
Right.
That's what I do.
Excellent. Excellent. And I really appreciate your insights today on having a child with special needs and being able to manage all that time and actually using that as a motivation to go out there, start your own business, free up your time. And, time is important, right?
Absolutely.
It's the most important thing that we have that we can give to our kids.
And I think we have a time situation.
We do. We do. Actually, we do have a time. So thank you so much for being on the show. This has been Matt Barbie with Time for Success, Business Owner Dad's Edition. Thanks again, Joel.
Thanks, Matt.